Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 5th of September, recording at 9:12 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first a quick review of the week. Well, for stock markets, it's been bloody. Although Wall Street reversed its opening declines today and closed a bit higher. But a number of other indices around the globe broke beneath their August range lows, and some of them actually hit new lows for the year, including a number of the Asian indices. Now, in terms of long-dated government bonds, they have rallied more or less steadily in line with the weakness in equities, although the U.S. Treasuries, I'm talking about bond futures, of course, but the U.S. Treasuries gave up over a point of gains here today to close unchanged. Now, in metals and in commodities generally, they've been fairly weak all throughout, and that's not least because of a background of a pretty strong U.S. dollar overall. And I noticed that the dollar is firm in here again today, with the euro currently trading at 142.32. So these recent trends remain in place. Now, gold sort of swung all over the place, but it's not maintaining breaks below 800, and is currently at 802 right now. Industrial metals have been coming down. Copper, one that a lot of fundamentalists have been saying would be in quite short supply this year, but that trend is weaker. Currently at 312 here in the States, that's down 14 cents. What else? The grain and bean complex has been hit with selling pressure this week as well. So all in all, you could say that we have seen a further asset liquidation and a further retreat into government-guaranteed securities. Government instruments, in other words. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, in terms of stock markets, the bearish forces certainly still have the upper hand overall, although some of these trends are looking a little bit overextended. But confidence is weak, and I maintain that what people are really going to require before they are drawn back into this market is some sort of fairly decisive change in monetary policies. Now, what we have at present is an environment where, of course, stock markets are depressed. They've been falling for quite some time. But the overall downtrends still dominate. People are still very concerned about corporate profits. The credit crisis rumbles along, and people worry about that spreading. But I think that really the emphasis of concern is switched more to global GDP growth and the slowdown that's underway. Now, my feeling is that people are probably overreacting in terms of the risks in Asia. And, you know, China is just not, although the Chinese stock market has certainly been very weak, you've got a strong economy still, and I don't think it's expanding at 10% anymore, but if it's expanding at 8%, that's mighty good. And it's doing this not so much on exports. The export sector is obviously weakened in line with the recessions or near recessions in much of the West, but it's doing it on consumption. And those consumption trends can continue because people have high savings rates, there is plenty of growth in those economies, and there's plenty of scope for government stimulus in terms of additional infrastructure projects. That's not true so much in the West, obviously. So we have an environment, though, where bearish sentiment, asset deleveraging really continues, and it becomes self-feeding overall. That's bad news for people who are riding down positions. It's good news for people who are sitting with cash and wish to increase the equity positions that they have. But there's no hurry to go rushing in, as I say, when these downward trends dominate. And the interesting thing about it, and I've described it today, is the tail that wags the stock market dog is, of course, government policy. And governments tend to be crisis-oriented, meaning that if they've been concerned about inflation, and if stock markets are mostly ranging as they have been, although we've certainly seen some renewed, quite sharp weakness in here in the latter part of this week, starting on Wednesday, actually. But governments looking at a background of mostly ranging stock markets have felt that they could persist with the anti-inflation policies. That's understandable enough. But if we get anything close to the tsunami that Bill Gross was talking about, did he cover some of his shorts today by any chance, given that Wall Street closed up? I didn't say that. Let me get back to the central banks. If we were to see anything close to an accelerating sell-off in stock markets, I think we would have a fairly rapid rethink. And if you go back to previous major stock market declines, when these have become very persistent, we have usually had some form of intervention. Now, the U.S. has been the main one that's been intervening so far, and it did so in August last year. It did so in January of this year, and again in March of this year. We certainly had a bear squeeze in July, last July, and I think that, again, if we were to see across the boards decline, that we would probably see a shift in policy from the central banks, and I think that's the kind of signal that many people may well be looking forward to, because there are a lot of people saying, well, you know, there's some really good value returning, but it's not historic levels of attractive value. So again, people are quite happy to bide their time, and if people are unwilling to buy, it only takes a little bit of selling to push stock markets lower, and that attracts short selling, and you know the rest. So the big change this week is that where earlier in the week it still looked to me as if we were actually going to see a continuation of the rally, that prospect appears to have unraveled. If there's a dissenting voice in all that, it's in the form of the performance of U.S. bank shares. And I'll post an indice or two, but you can see them anytime, of course, in the library. But the U.S. banks have not knuckled under. They haven't fallen back towards their July low like the S&P. They're actually up near their August highs. And they sold off yesterday, but completely reversed that decline and a bit more in here today. So that's fairly interesting, I believe. And I do regard banks as a lead indicator. Of course, banks have been weaker in Europe and elsewhere. Now, in terms of the long-dated government bonds, We can understand the safe haven buying, that's lowering yields, and then we have the growing recession, deflation fears. I maintain that central banks would like a good inflation, beg your pardon, a good deflation scare. Just repeat that. I maintain that central banks would like a good deflationary scare. Because their primary concern in recent months has been inflation, and understandably so. But as we know, a lot of the factors that had been causing the most anxiety on inflation, the price of crude oil, that's been very much in retreat. The price of agricultural commodities, they're very much in retreat. But the cost of living has been going up. The cost of food prices has certainly been going up, and that will linger a long time after some of the futures prices come back down. And that's led to higher wage demand. So central banks remain very concerned about that overall. But the more these economies weaken, the more unemployment figures go up. And in the U.S., the unemployment figures jumped to 6.1%. Here on the data released today, the more unemployment rises, the more likely it is that that will help to moderate those wage pressures somewhat. And if we get widespread deflationary fears, then central banks can play white knight once again and come in and say that they will make sure that it doesn't happen here, and so on. And I don't expect the deflation. I think that they will. I mean, we have deflationary pockets, that takes place all the time. It's quite possible, as I've said before, for inflation and deflationary forces to operate at the same time in different sectors. So we've got the deflation in house prices, and we've got the deflation in consumer spending. We've got the deflation in asset prices generally, and that costs a funk over the markets, doesn't it? Because even if somebody's been sitting in cash and riding out the bear market in equities, and even if someone has profited from a lot of short positions in these equity markets, you get these big global slowdowns and these asset deleveraging periods, and everybody loses money one way or another. If it's not the house price or the art collection or gold prices. Now, gold is offering some relative strength in here overall, but it's not going up. It has actually come down, and I think that's still the case. I think that gold around $800 is not unattractive. I've said before that it maybe has at the outside $100 downside risk at most, and a fair amount of additional upside, I believe, over the medium to longer term. Not least because we live in a fiat currency world, and central banks will continue to print money in excess of GDP growth more often than not, and that is inflationary. Again, no central bank wants a strong currency in this environment. And that's been the case for a number of years now. And by this environment, I mean the competitive pressures created by globalization. And the countries that have a lot of debt, whether it's government debt or corporate debt or consumer debt or all three, are going to least want a strong currency and most need a weak currency, and they'll print more. That always happens more often than not in a fiat currency environment. So that remains the long-term gold story, but let's not get too excited about bullion until we see platinum start to give an all-clear signal, or unless these precious metals accelerate downwards again and become well and truly overextended. Then that would provide a clear opportunity. Meanwhile, in currencies, it's been very much the dollar story, but a secondary theme has been the strength of the yen. And I think that's really a symbol of or evidence of the global deleveraging that has been taking place. Now, once a currency trend is underway, it does gather momentum, and that's what we've been seeing recently. I don't see any evidence yet that the US dollar's rally is over. But these moves tend to be sharp. They're often sharp, but relatively short-lived. Because what's going to happen is that people will run the dollar up, as they're doing, and then sooner or later, everybody's going to sit around and say, well, wait a minute, you know, we've got an awful lot of dollars, and everybody else has a lot of dollars as well. And is everything in terms of fundamental underpinnings supporting that? Because they will no longer be able to argue that the dollar is rock bottom cheap. And that's when we're going to get a rollover and sell off. I think we may see a slower period of ascent, excuse me, where you get more of a staircase step ranging type of ascent first, but that hasn't happened yet. Now, going back to these commodity markets, crude oil, this is such an important factor to see crude come back down, and it's currently trading at 106.60. 63. I maintain that it will go under $100, and therefore that's taken a lot of the pressure off. But problems in terms of costs of energy and all the products that such as fertilizers, which are or consist in part, or if not largely, of natural gas or petroleum byproducts, these aren't going to come down for quite some time, if at all. So I think that what really is different this time is that commodities or commodity prices from here on will reflect the new marginal costs of production. Now, that's also true of crude oil. My view is that the peak oil story is really about the marginal cost of production, and that's going up. People have to drill deeper. It's more costly. The oil that's in known areas is more difficult to extract. And that does again push up the overall costs. Well, in terms of farming, the prices of a lot of these commodities have gone up very substantially. But look at the cost of fertilizers; they have absolutely soared, and farm equipment costs have soared, and water costs have soared. So that's the new factor that we have to cope with. So I think we get this decade is marked by what I suspect is a near permanent ratcheting up of the production of a lot of these commodities. We've seen the same thing in mining. And that's not going to go away. Those pressures are mitigated by recessions or in global slowdowns, economic slowdowns, such as we're seeing at present. But I would wager that we're not going to see many commodities go back to the same levels that we saw at the beginning of the decade. A few will, but not many, or a few may, but not many, in my view, overall. And on a longer-term basis, I think that the commodity super cycle. I've said for years that this was likely to go on for at least a couple of decades, given the history of previous commodity super cycles. Get these long bull runs, particularly coming off long bear runs, as we saw previously. And then we have this new added factor of all these rapidly growing developing economies with large populations. And that's a new factor. And those populations are still going up, and that growth is continuing, albeit at a slower rate. So all I think that the slowdown is causing is a lengthy lull and correction in this ongoing commodity super cycle. And commodities are being dragged down right now by the general deleveraging. Again, people had piled into commodities particularly during the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year. All those big speculative flows into commodity tracker funds, well, that's coming out now, and that's bringing these markets down to levels where they will be attractive once again. We can say that about a lot of assets, including stock markets. But we probably have to endure this current environment of deleveraging for a while longer. And I will feel more confident about a sustained recovery when I see clear evidence of the change in central bank policy that I've been talking about. Now, if that happens piecemeal and incrementally, you know, Australia cut rates by a quarter of a point, first rate cut in 7 years this week, that's newsworthy, but it's not an earth-shattering development. If we saw central banks move in concert, that would be far more significant, but they're only going to do that, of course, if they feel that there's a real crisis, Bill Gross's tsunami, in other words. Well, I think that pretty much covers most of the topics that I want to discuss with you. So, a testing week. We've had a number of those, haven't we? I hope you have a good, peaceful, relaxed weekend. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.